Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day. The Penguins in overtime beat the Philadelphia Flyers.
Kessel again on the puck. Now to Letang. Takes it to a stick. Slap shot. Score! Chris Letang and Crosby team up. Crosby in front deflects it home. And the Pittsburgh Penguins win it in overtime here at the 2:48 mark. And ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.
The great Mike Lang with the call last night on the Penguins Radio Network on Sidney Crosby's game winner in overtime to beat the Flyers. Well, in a rare interview, Mike Tomlin, now they have the Bengals this week, openly talking to Tony Dungy about, look, we want the Patriots. Well, that's a few weeks away. Normally, Mike Tomlin would never talk like that, but did. Someone who will talk about the Patriots or anybody else along the way anytime we ask him is Neil Coolong. Neil, welcome.
I talk about all the opponents, and absolutely I'll talk about the Patriots.
I know you will.
I don't get what the issue is with that, though. It's like it's a conversation, you know. It's not like he's mapping strategy out or anything like that. Of course he's thinking about it. Any coach who honestly doesn't in any way look ahead is lying. There's just no way that type of person isn't analyzing absolutely everything that's going on. They have a job to do. They'll take care of the Bengals, you know, with this week's preparation. And they obviously, well, kind of at least took care of Green Bay last week. So I don't think it's really hurting anybody.
No, I don't think so. But obviously against Green Bay on Sunday night, Neil, I thought in the end the stars were the stars. And I think that, you know, down the stretch, to me, that's an important factor. Those three guys play great.
Yeah, it kind of seems to be that that's it really what their team is. And imagine that. I mean, it's now week going into week 13, and we're starting to see what we thought we would see from the beginning. You have to give Green Bay some credit in the sense that they're limited at the quarterback position, and their skill position guys were able to step up and make some big plays for them to keep it competitive. But yeah, the Steelers really offensively had the you know, throttle down the whole game. I thought they played a very strong, very balanced offensive game, with the exception of the two turnovers, which I think Ben would obviously like to have back. But they played really well overall, and we're starting to see more and more what this offense can be. Now the problem is we've shifted paradigms from, you know, a strong defensive team that couldn't get an offense going to a defense that can't help themselves but give up 50-yard touchdowns in every game. I mean, it's remarkable how often they're doing that now.
Artie Burns, he made one play in the game, and he celebrated as if he'd won the Super Bowl. He got burned so many times the other night. I mean, how much concern is there about how he's playing at corner? He's a great athlete, but I mean, there's issues.
We talked about this several weeks ago. I remember specifically pointing it out. The Steelers' pass defense that we saw early in the season was much more of a factor of their opponents, oddly enough, just not throwing the ball. It wasn't defense. It was a lack of passing offense. The big question that I had then that's being answered resoundingly now is, what do you know about Artie Burns? He wasn't challenged in the first part of the year. And that really worried me. It's just like, wait, he's a second-year guy. Okay, he's not locking down his side of the field. They're not going after him. Somebody's going to here eventually. And when they do, we're going to find out how much Artie Burns has grown or regressed from last season. And unfortunately for the Steelers, the answer is he's regressed badly. His technique is really sloppy. He's not a great tackler, whether open field or in run support. You have a lot of concerns with that. And this is all being compounded by the fact that without Joe Hayden, you have to choose between Will Gay and Cody Sensabaugh to put opposite Artie Burns. And your nickel package is basically destroyed. They're going to struggle with that. That's exactly what the last two teams that they've played in having fairly successful offensive games. They were able to exploit that, and they were able to get the ball deep down the field consistently on the whole group. They're really struggling. That's a significant problem, and it's not going to be solved next week.
Because Neil, I thought he was flat out bad the other night. I mean, bad.
That might have been his worst game since maybe the first couple he played, and you sort of expect that from a rookie. But now it's like you've got a lot of snaps in, Artie. You've got to be playing better than this. I don't know if it's a mental issue or what, but you know the very high end, outlandish celebrations followed by, and I hate to be the body language doctor, but you watch him after some of those plays, he just looks defeated. Yeah. It's like, wow, if I'm a quarterback, I'm going to keep going after him until his tongue is dragging on the field. You know, if he's going to be that down and out after a completion, you know, I'm going to test him for all he's worth. I think we're going to continue to see that more and more.
He may not be big in stature, but what have you felt about Mike Hilton's play?
I thought we saw him a lot more early in the season. They had a nice little surprise nickel slot blitz that they used to a pretty good degree of success the first half of the season. I think he's quieted off a little bit, but mm-hmm. a lot of this really is just a lot of it is being caused by the fact that without Hayden in there, they're so much worse of a secondary overall. It's hard for any one of them to kind of pick up and make plays because the other one's kind of letting everything down. I mean, Sensabaugh didn't play well at all. I mean, Burns is going to be the headline, you know, bad guy, at least from the Packers game, but Sensabaugh had a bad game too. You know, I think Hilton, he's going to get grouped in with that, and because collectively they're not making plays anymore, it's hard to see any of them really standing out. But I think as far as additions to the roster overall of the season, they got a steal. He played really, really well, probably better than a Steelers nickel has in 2-3 years. You throw Hayden into that, you really had, you know, some optimism earlier in the season that they had their secondary kind of figured out. But one injury is going to cause all this. They haven't really figured anything out. You know, hopefully Hilton's the type of guy that can, you know, try to find a couple plays for him next week, because they're going to get another 40 pass attempt game against them.
I don't think Cam Hayward's made the Pro Bowl, has he?
He has not.
And it seems to me like he's been playing at a Pro Bowl level in the last several, you know, 2016 aside, because he missed a chunk of time, but it seems like he's been playing at a Pro Bowl level for years now, especially this year.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing really well before he got hurt last year. 2015, I think, he was probably just a little bit under the radar, and it's tougher as a 3-4 defensive end, which he really was playing a lot more back then than he is now. They moved him inside a little bit more now. It's tough to get the recognition against, you know, pure pass rush specialists, guys that are going out and getting 16 sacks a year. When you're doing the dirty work down low in the position that he's in, you might not always get that recognition. But I felt he deserved it in 2015. I could see why he didn't get in. I think he would have in 2016 if he didn't get hurt. Now, I'm not even talking Pro Bowl. I think he's an all-pro player. I mean, he's unstoppable. How many multi-sack games does he have? He's working inside and he's working outside. He's probably the team's MVP. If you think about it overall, yeah. He's been the one consistent player game in and game out. It's great to see for a guy that rose through the ranks the way that he did, the pedigree that he has. Plus, he's a team captain. He's a leader in the community. This is the type of guy you really want to root for. I think this is going to be his year.
Are you surprised? Now, you know how Mike Tomlin is. Are you surprised he actually has been openly talking about the Patriots? You and I both know it's okay to do that. It's just a conversation. But are you surprised he's done it?
I'm kind of on the fence about it. I think there was a certain – I hate to say this, too, and then get all, you know, hyper-analytical on it, but – he had like a different tone of voice when he was talking to Dungy. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but obviously he's not talking to the assembled media either.
Right.
He kind of let his hair down. You know, I think that's more of who Mike is. And in that sense, he is excited about playing the Patriots. You know, he's a very positive, very energetic, excited guy. I could see him being excited about a lot of things, you know. And with that, their biggest challenge, and certainly his biggest challenge in his career, has been beating the Patriots. And I've been saying for a long time now, if the Steelers are going to the Super Bowl, they've got to beat, basically, they're going to have to beat New England in Heinz Field twice. They're going to have to beat them in the regular season to get that game back at Heinz Field for the AFC Championship game and then beat them there. Tomlin basically said the same thing. And to me, it's like, all right, well, he's giving a refreshing, honest answer, which is not necessarily typical of him in many cases. But when he does those one-on-one interviews, he tends to kind of let go a little bit more. I was surprised just in the sense that he really kind of, you know, chased down the rabbit hole with Dungy's question. Dungy asking him probably to get him to reveal a little bit more than he might have regularly. I was kind of surprised at how quickly he was willing to do it.
Yeah, no, I was too. What do you think about Cincinnati this week? Because Cincinnati is playing a lot better now than they were the opening month of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of up and down. They've got consistency issues across the board. They don't really have a good offensive identity. The weirdest thing that I saw from them is heading into this past game against Cleveland, which almost is a scrimmage nowadays, they were only averaging 55 plays a game. Right. I mean, that's shockingly low. Right. 55 a game over 11 games. That's a really ineffective offense. They're one of the worst third down teams in the NFL, as is Pittsburgh. So typically, that's probably why we see a lower scoring game between these two, unless the Steelers can get the ground game going, which they're going to have to do. But Cincinnati is such a hard team to gauge. You have no idea who they are. They're fastball working for them anymore. You know, they're not a great defensive team. They're not a great big play team. They don't run the ball well. I think they might have found something with Mixon, but it just makes you wonder why he didn't get the ball a whole lot before that. I mean, did he just finally now learn the offense? I mean, he can't just run forward into the A-gap. I mean, how hard is that? You should be able to get your second round, you know, prize running back the ball a little bit more often. So maybe coaching is a part of that as well.
Yeah, but Andy Dalton is... This is the... Andy Dalton is a perfect example, and I think to a point Joe Flacco is too, that it's hard for them to move off a quarterback who has a ceiling and they're at it.
I would agree with that 100%.
I mean, there's a ceiling that Joe Flacco has and there's a ceiling that Andy Dalton has, and they both have reached it. But you don't have any other option in this league, because if you do, there's a good chance it's not going to be as good as the one you have, even though they have maxed out.
You know, I spent my childhood living in Minnesota, and I'm close with a lot of Vikings fans. I felt their pain over the years because they were stuck in that limbo stage. You know, they had to keep finding new quarterbacks every other year.
Right.
The ones that they draft wouldn't work out. I think to you know, illustrate what you're saying, which I agree with completely, is you have to hang on to Andy Dalton because it's really hard to find anybody else. But at what point do you have to say, enough is enough, we're not going to continue to grow? You can't honestly watch Joe Flacco this season and be excited about the fact that he's their quarterback for the next 5 years. There is no way you could be happy about it. They have decimated that offense to a point. It's a several-year project to rebuild.
Yes.
Your trio of playmakers is two guys that have been cut previously by other teams and a rookie who could barely get on there, a second-year guy who could barely get on the field. That's what you have right now. I remember that the Ravens Twitter account tweeted out something like a rhetorical question, a picture of the three of them on there. Is this the best wide receiver trio in the NFL? It's like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
You're not going to get a whole lot worse than what they have now.
Right.
I know what Mike Wallace did in the past. I know what Jeremy Maclin did in the past.
Yeah.
They're nowhere close to where they were as players.
No.
And they have an average quarterback getting them the ball. And they're not particularly inclined to want to dominate in the ground game. And on top of that, their offensive line is battered and not particularly talented in the first place. So, yeah, they're a mess. I mean, they're not. Neither of them are good offensive teams, and they're not going to be anytime soon.
He's averaging, Joe Flacco is, 5.4 yards per pass attempt. Not per completion, per attempt. I mean, that's stunning.
It's just a miserable number. Absolutely miserable. Joe Flacco, I think, is the only quarterback in NFL history to have multiple games with 50 pass attempts and under 200 yards.
Right.
He didn't do it this year, but that's the way they've been using him. I've never understood it. He's not the best downfield passer you've ever seen, but you're dink and dunking with your $25 million quarterback. And why? It's mostly because they don't have any skill position players. They have historically done a terrible job ever drafting or developing any of them. They're almost always free agents. Flacco isn't good enough to throw those guys open. He's not good enough to lead his team to 30 points when all else around him is falling apart. He's just simply not good enough to do that. And Dalton is very similar. In fact, I'd even argue Dalton gets the Bengals in probably more losing situations than Flacco does in Baltimore.
It's interesting you bring that up because, to me, Andy Dalton, and again, I think he's reached his ceiling. It's not like he doesn't do some good things because he does. Right? But he is a perfect example of the stat of come-from-behind victories, like fourth-quarter come-from-behind victories, that stat they always put up. They never put up the stat of how many times he, the quarterback, put them in that spot where he had to bring them back.
Or maybe was on the losing end of it. You know, he wasn't good enough to close out the game.
Exactly. They never tell you, hey, he's got 20 fourth-quarter comebacks. Well, maybe in a dozen of them, he was the reason they were behind to begin with.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that many times against Pittsburgh. I mean, by and large, Andy Dalton's game plan against the Steelers is throw the ball to A.J. Green as much as humanly possible.
No doubt.
And when he doesn't do that, they get killed. And we saw that. That second half of the week, what was it, seven, game against Cincinnati, that second half was one of the most dominating and one-sided performances I've ever seen. And the Steelers didn't even really, step on the throat. But Cincinnati didn't do anything. I think they had, five straight three and outs. Dalton is just such a limited player. He's not necessarily horrible in any one area, but he's not great at anything either. He doesn't read the field particularly well. Anytime you ever watch him in all 22 film, you'll see him miss 9 or 10 throws a game, whether he threw it or whether he missed somebody who was wide open. He's just completely deficient, and he doesn't have long-term contract stability, probably because of that. It's really rare for a starting quarterback to be making what he's making year in and year out and have that much of it incentive-based. It's because they know he's not very good, but he could be, and we want to be in a position to be able to pay him and keep him if he does turn out to be good. But really, I think we've seen the best of what Andy Dalton is going to do in his career. He's just, he's probably going to be a backup for a little while, spot starter here and there, but his time has to be coming out in Cincinnati pretty quick. Within the next, season or two, they're going to have to look elsewhere.
Meanwhile, in the pure 180, we haven't heard the best from you yet. Neil, thanks so much. I appreciate your time, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford knows it's the holiday season, and you need a dependable vehicle, but also need as much money left in your pocket as possible. Let's be honest. If somebody gives you way too much for your piece of junk trade or cash just for buying a car, who do you think is paying for it?
You are!
Come see why SMC has been selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Pick from over 100 2017 Ford F-Series trucks. Priced as low as $24,997. Choose from 42. 2017 four-wheel drive Escapes slashed as low as $19,975. At SMC, take $3,500 off all remaining 2017 Ford Explorers and get 0% financing for up to 72 months. Don't believe everyone else's hype. Sunbury Motors always gives you huge discounts, aggressive trade values, and the best financing options. And with over four city blocks of new Fords, they have what you're looking for. Sunbury Motors Ford in the 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And very pleased to bring in someone I consider a real friend of this show that's been remarkable to talk with every time, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Tony, happy holidays. What a pleasure it is to have you back.
All right. Happy holidays to you guys.
Tony, I want to start with the Olympics, which are on the horizon.
Oh,
what kind of North Korea's fired off another ICBM. Tony, what is it? What's the climate like heading into this one? Is it a potential financial disaster?
Yes. We're very involved in it, and my COO, who has the office next to me, is considered an expert in all this. He was in Pyeongchang 2 weeks ago for 2 weeks. Taking a tour, seeing everything, going and understanding what the on-sales look like and how the venues go. And, his feedback was interesting. He said nobody over there is afraid of any kind of attack as far as the locals go. They don't even seem to think about it, even though it's not too far away. But his feedback after looking, it just doesn't add up. He says the hotels are saying they don't have any room, but they had, at that time, less than 30% of the tickets sold. And now yesterday they put out a report that they're at 50%, and there's just no possibility that's the case. You know, in looking at the inventory that's out there and looking at, you know, the lines while he was there and how they were trying to get people to attend, you know, this is one of those that we're just going to take it on the chin if you're an Olympic sponsor and get ready for Tokyo in 2020.
Is it a case where can they gauge, can you gauge, can he gauge what percentage of that 50% now would be South Korean and what percentage would be foreign money or foreign stays at the moment?
So he believes that the number is fake. And I trust him because his job is to go into the inventory holds for all the different countries and look at them. So he doesn't believe it's over 50%. And he believes that when it comes to the Korean people, the South Korean people, there just hasn't been the kind of excitement that they were looking for. You know, they have the Dream Concert, which is, you know, one of the opening ceremonies things that they're doing there. And that sold out in 5 minutes. But, you know, events that are usually impossible to touch for any kind of Olympic Games, like speed skating, hockey finals, those sorts of things, they're readily available. So we think this is going to be a bust. We would also say, look, if you're considering ever going to an Olympic Games and you want to actually see all the events, this is the one to go to. Fly round trip from San Francisco for $800. It's not cheap, but it's, for South Korea, that's cheap.
And by the way, I can understand at least somewhat how the South Korean people feel about what's happening in North Korea. Because my daughter married, her husband is stationed at Anderson in Guam.
Okay.
They are not concerned either. So they, in other words, it's just what I think if you're there, you're not concerned. That I think that. So I wasn't surprised when you said that.
No, I think it's a story, right? It's like the Zika virus. You know, nobody was going to go to Rio because of Zika or because of the London terror threat or because, you know, there's always some kind of way that they're hedging their bet that maybe this Olympics won't be that good. In this case, it's just, look, it's not a destination location that people know about. You know, even when Ken came back here and showed me the pictures from, you know, Gwangyang, which is a city 30 miles away, that's a beach resort. It looked amazing, but I had no idea that even exists. So.
Right.
It's just not going to be what Tokyo 2020 is. I mean, look, the reality the Olympics is facing right now is, you know, they're getting good sponsorships for the big ones, that they're going back to their core, right? They know that Tokyo, Paris, and L.A. are going to do well, but somehow they got to survive Pyeongchang and Beijing.
Well, let's get to that next part, though, because McDonald's, for example, is backed out as a sponsor. And I talked to someone that I know that understands the negotiations and knows them well, and I trust them just like you trust your CEO. And he said, look, he said the corruption's too much for us to deal with. I mean, is that part of the story here?
Yes. It's, you know, it's not just corruption across the actual games itself. It's the Olympic committees and the national associations too, which, you know, gets us in trouble sometimes because, you know, our business is based on transparency, and so we have to be transparent. And, you know, we do business with some of these people, and they're dishonest. And when you say, hey, these guys are being dishonest, it's funny, they get sensitive about it, right? Like, oh, how dare you call us dishonest? It's like, well, wait a minute. Like, I managed all your tickets for the last games. I know you're dishonest. Like, this isn't a thing. And so I think it's becoming increasingly difficult on corporate America, especially with the millennial generation coming up and saying, look, we're not brand, we're brand ambiguous, right? We don't want to be, you know, buying something from the corrupt corporate culture that is whatever it is. And they have to be really careful about that. And the World Cup and the Olympics right now are just, you know, it's too corrupt. Even FIFA is starting to announce that they're facing a shortfall for the World Cup because sponsors are starting to go away from them.
I'm not going to say make or break. Is Tokyo important to stabilizing the Olympics?
Oh, yes. Yeah, and here's why. So most of these, you know, we're pretty close. You and I are pretty close to the ice, so we see these things. Most of these deals are not like one Olympics deals, right? You have to sign in what's called a cycle. So it's, you know, 6 years or 8 years, and you get a cycle of the games that come through. And it makes it harder for them sometimes to sell the game cycle when they don't know where the games are going to be. Now that you have Tokyo, Paris, and L.A. in the same cycle, you know, that's them going back to saying, look, we're going to go back to our roots and try to do what we can here. But if Tokyo isn't a home run, if we see the traditional sponsors run into trouble there, you know, the reality is the new sponsors haven't stepped up. You know, they lost McDonald's, and they put out a whole big press release about, well, we replaced them with Intel. Technology is going to change the world, and we're going to, you know, change the sponsorship to the new generation of sponsors. But a lot of those tech firms, Steve, they're just not that active when it comes to that kind of sports sponsorship. Right? They are in some instances, but not internationally when it comes to FIFA, when it comes to IOC, when it comes to those games.
Yeah, they're not in tune, because they don't need to be. They're not in tune with the sports culture or with the sports community. Thus, they aren't as invested in it 100%. Yep. Would that be fair?
No. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a millennial thing. Like, you know, if you look at why Beijing was successful, people would say, well, then how, you know, if that's the argument, then Beijing would have been successful. And that's true. But Beijing was successful because a lot of American, North American, and European businesses were starting to make their way into China. They were making inroads into China. They didn't care what you thought about them in Central PA, right? It wasn't the reason for the sponsorship. But that's not the case with Tokyo. Tokyo is a very mature market. It's an international market. And, you know, McDonald's is already there. Quite frankly, sponsoring the Olympics may or may not get them much lift. And I think what's happening is what we've talked about in the past. The Olympic Games aren't resonating with the millennial generation. They have too much else to choose from, and they don't seem to care as much. And this is becoming a major problem for all of those, right? And quite frankly, you know, you're in a situation with FIFA, too, where, you know, teams that are generally exciting that help them get exposure aren't going to be in the World Cup.
Which then brings me to the World Cup. Does the bidding for 2026 become exponentially more important because Russia won't have Italy or the U.S.? 22 is in Qatar, which everyone knows that's an issue. Does 26 become one of those watershed stabilizing moments for them?
Has to be. I think there's a 30 to 40% chance the 2022 games aren't in Qatar. Right. We've all seen this before, you know, where they'll move it to the United States or they'll move it somewhere because of some kind of excuse. But the reality is there are 20 regional sponsorships available for the Qatar World Cup, and one of them has been sold. Right. That's awful. And I don't think that's going to change much, especially when they're, you know, trying to walk their way through, you know, expanding the game, because, you know, those top tier partners in Russia, Qatar, and China, just not there. So, yes. I mean, the reality is there's also, I would believe, a little bit of the host countries get in and, you know, guaranteeing Mexico and the United States in the World Cup is definitely helpful when the United States is going to miss the World Cup and we're going to see the economic impact of that here in Russia. You know, and missing Italy and the Netherlands. The Netherlands have finished second and third in the last two World Cups and they're not in it.
Right. Yeah. And again, they bring people to the sets, and they bring people to the venues. I mean, especially Italy does.
Especially Italy. That is a gigantic, devoted fan base that spends money, and they're not going to be there. So I think you have to have that stabilized World Cup. I think you had this era of ignorance and this era of arrogance, both between the IOC and FIFA, which definitely aligned with their corruption. And these eras were, we don't need the major powers, right? We can do it our way. And their way was, okay, we're going to go to Qatar. We're going to go to, you know, Beijing twice. We're going to go, you know, all these places. We're going to go to Sochi. And they go to places that nobody cares about because it doesn't hurt them in the moment. But we're going to see the fallout of that in the next 10 to 15 years. And that's why they have to figure out a way in 2026 to get somewhere that's going to be a staple for them. Because you've already had South Africa, which was a total disaster. Right, you set things up pretty well in Brazil. Now you're going to Russia. We'll see how that goes, and then Qatar. That's a pretty rough cycle for sponsors to buy into.
Which now brings me to the National Football League and Roger Goodell, of course, with his contract extension. You and I both feel the same way. This is one of the great magic acts ever. It seems like they've taken the goose that laid the golden egg, and they've taken a hammer to it at times. How are they doing on the sponsorship side? And then here's the other part: how are they doing on the ticket side of it?
So we haven't shared this number yet because I just saw the report yesterday, but we have 30 million tickets that go through our system every year, across multiple different sports. We break them down by sport. NFL ticket usage by corporate sponsors, by the people who are our customers, is down from 72% to 59% this year, in 1 year.
Wow.
It's dropped that far. We send out blast emails. This next thing is not a scientific statement, but, and I don't care who takes what side of it, but we send out a lot of email campaigns, like anybody else does, to people who work at businesses that say, "Hi, Steve, would you like to consider our software to help you manage your NFL tickets?" The amount of response we get from people that read something like, "As long as those guys kneel, I'm not going to have anything to do with the NFL." Dude, I have nothing to do with the NFL. They're yelling at me.
Right.
It's a mess. They are in a terrible spot right now. The game participation is way down. It's not safe. You know, I just saw the ratings again for this last weekend. Everything was down but the Sunday night game, and that was only up 3%. And if you actually compare that to last year and the game that they had, of course it would be up. All the metrics are bad. And they're going to continue to hand the keys to this guy. I don't understand it.
It's interesting because is there a possibility that advertising is now going to be affected in the decisions that they make about the National Football League being more judicious with it?
You know, the issue with advertising and corporate spend, people ask me that a lot, and it's a good question. These deals aren't short-term deals, much like the IOC and the FIFA deals where we're talking about a cycle. Right.
Right. These are five-year deals sometimes.
Yeah, I don't get to come in to the Eagles and say, "I want to sponsor them now that they're, you know, unbeatable and they're beating everybody." I want to sponsor the Eagles. Right? And the response is, "Okay, here's a 5-year contract." Right? So if you have people who have signed a contract anytime in the last, 3 to 8 years and they've soured on the NFL, they can't do anything until their contract expires. So it's always going to trail in the court of popular opinion, right? So the damage we're seeing now will be seen in sponsorship renewals and in, TV renewals and in that kind of coverage over the next few years.
It's amazing. And yet, I know it still loses money, but advertising-wise, ticket-wise, interest-wise, MLS continues to do really well.
Even missing the World Cup, which hurts them, it still continues to do really well. And the NBA is doing really well. I mean, the reality is they're just games that are easy for the next generation to digest. You know, we've been around forever. We've heard every 5 to 10 years you hear, it's the next generation that's going to put soccer over in the United States, right? I've been hearing that since the early 80s.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And it just hasn't happened. Maybe it's happening. Right? Maybe this is finally it. Maybe we're in a situation where this next generation, coupled with the fact that football, participation is down significantly, coupled with the fact that it's much easier to broadcast the games from, across the pond, maybe this next generation is the one that brings soccer in. And the NBA is exploding globally. I mean, there's a reason the Clippers got $2.1 billion. There's a reason there's over $1 billion to buy the Houston Rockets. There's a reason these things are happening. It's because they see what's happening internationally. You know, it's not a coincidence that the Dream Team in 1992 was wiping everybody out, and now the rest of the world is caught up because they're playing too, and they're watching too. In the NFL, they're not playing, and they're not watching internationally.
So the NFL's forays to London and Mexico City as examples, business-wise, makes sense?
I think London's made sense. I think, Mexico City, I don't know. I haven't seen enough metrics to make it make sense. I have seen Belichick rip it and say it was a terrible experience, but, we all fly further than that for other games. The London experience seems to make sense as far as economically goes. They're selling out the games. They're doing multiple games over there. They're doing them in different places. They're doing it at Twickenham. They're doing them at Wembley, and it seems to be working. The problem is, for the games to really grow, you need participation. Right, you need people forming football leagues in China. You need people forming football leagues in Italy and France and Spain. And we remember the World Football League, right? It's just not happening.
Right.
And it's not happening, and that's where I don't understand it. I don't want to sound bitter against the NFL. The NFL actually has been great to us. They're a great partner, and we love a lot of the teams, and they do very well. But the reality is, if I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the guy steering the ship, I'm looking at Roger Goodell, and I'm saying, how is he doing versus Adam Silver right now? Right, and we're not saying apples to apples. How are you growing the game? Silver's killing him, and Don Garber's killing him.
Right, be staying ahead all the time. I mean, you may or may not agree with a stance on gambling or whatever, but he does an op-ed showing that at least he's got a handle on what he's thinking mm-hmm. about. You may or may not agree with one and done. You may not agree with high school players playing in the league, but he seems to stay ahead of issues, and he actually seems to set the agenda on them instead of reacting to it.
Exactly. They don't have a problem with player protests right now, because it did happen with, we remember, Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Right.
This is not the first time people didn't stand up for the national anthem. Chris Jackson didn't do it. And they saw it then, it created a plan, and now it's in the collective bargaining agreement. And so regardless of how you feel about it, they've already addressed the problem. And it seems like Garber and Silver are doing this over and over again. So we're sitting down and saying, look, this gambling thing is going to come to a head, because it's very common. For those folks who listen that haven't gone to sporting events in Europe, you can gamble during the game. I mean, you literally can go up at halftime and place a bet in the stadium next to where you buy a hot dog. And, you know, all of the different teams are sponsored by online gambling outfits, or, you know, you can walk down and right next to your local 7-Eleven is the sports book. So he seems to be in front of these things. Whereas I look at Roger Goodell, and there's nothing he's in front of. It's all so reactive, and it's to a point where I understand why guys like Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones are upset with him. You're just making it up as you go along. That's not how anything works.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And part of what you do is not reactive. You're trying to be proactive. You're always looking 18 months, two mm-hmm. years out. So on mm-hmm. your projections, and also what people have told you 18 months to 2 years out, what are they telling you about the direction of all the sports that we're seeing right now, pro and con?
You know what's interesting? You know, sometimes things happen that you look back at it and you think, how did they see that and do so well on it? Like when the Patriots played the Seahawks in the Super Bowl and the get-in ticket was $10,000, right? Well, that was the case because somebody 18 months before said, hey, there's a chance this is going to happen. And if it does, and I align myself here, I'm going to cash in. And the sponsors are doing that too. So what the sponsors are doing is they're looking at these different things. You know, AIG, who's a customer of ours, MasterCard's customer, they're looking at rugby internationally, and they're saying, look, I see where this is going, and we're going to place a bet on what's going to happen in 3 years. And then the game comes in 3 years, and you're like, how does MasterCard know to have their logo all over the field?
Right.
You know what people are betting on right now? Tiger Woods.
I was about to ask that. I was about to ask that question, and I changed up.
So high on him that it's okay if I got to go bet $500,000, $1 million, which to us is a lot of money, but to Fortune 500 company that spends, I mean, I'll give you an example. We've got, you know, a handful of companies here. I was looking at their numbers for this year that have well over $40 million a year just in sports tickets, nothing else. This isn't even their sponsorship rights. It's just the tickets they own. So for them to go say, bet $1 million on Tiger Woods. If you lose it, so what? But if he wins the Masters, Steve, can you imagine?
It puts everything back on the map and makes even bigger stars of Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and so mm-hmm. forth, because they will, on his coattails, become bigger.
100%. And you know, a lot of companies bet on this win and lose. Dick's Sporting Goods had a terrible year 2 years ago because they bet heavy on golf. It fell apart, right? But I'll tell you from personal experience, I'm sitting in rooms where people are placing bets on this now because the upside is so high that it makes sense. And going all the way back and bringing our conversation around, that's how a lot of sponsors approached Tokyo. They looked at the IOC's six-year ramp or the eight-year cycle, and they said, these all might be duds. But Tokyo does have the chance to be one of those of Olympics that is just outstanding, one of those. Mm-hmm. It brings everybody together in a place where there's not a lot of political trouble. You know, there's not a lot of military conflict there. It's an international city. It's Switzerland-esque. It's very modern. It's easy to get around. It's easy to get to. That's a bet. So, yeah, Tiger Woods has been the one that's come up a lot for us. We get that question a lot.
I was going to ask that, and then I changed up.
If he wins the Masters, I can't even imagine what that would be like. He's going to break every ratings record there is.
It'll be off the charts ratings wise for golf, obviously. What it would do for the sport, it would ramp it up, and then you're going to a traditional place like Shinnecock Hills for the U.S. Open. You know, Then you start to get a little momentum.
Yeah, and that's the hope, right? If you don't believe everybody at the PGA Tour that sells sponsorships and tickets, isn't rooting for Tiger Woods, and I got to bridge this up because that's what they're trying to do. And really, you know, what you said earlier, the other thing that we see, you know, longer term, a little bit safer bets that we're seeing people make, we're still seeing a lot of bets on rugby, on international rugby. We're seeing a lot of bets on, you know, teams like the All Blacks. Maybe people in Pennsylvania haven't heard of the All Blacks. In California, they certainly haven't. The All Blacks are one of the most well-known brands internationally. A lot of these brands are making the bet that they're going to come to the States, right? And so we're seeing that, and then we're obviously seeing the long play on MLS. People can't get enough money into MLS right now. Every franchise there is, there's four or five people trying to buy their way in.
Tony, absolute pleasure as always. We could probably go on for another hour. I appreciate it so much. The conversation is really, really fun.
All right. I love it. We'll talk to you guys soon. It's one of the highlights of my day.
Same here, my friend. Thank you so much. And if we don't talk before Christmas, happy holidays to you and yours.
Happy holidays as well. You guys too.
Tony Knopp, the outstanding CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, and I do mean outstanding. There has not been one time that he has been on where I left even remotely disappointed with the conversation. Every time a guy went, I could have got another hour with the guy. Amazing. Hey, tomorrow, Donnie Collins will do the show from North Carolina tomorrow as part of the Big Ten ACC Challenge, Penn State and NC State. Santa is coming up in an hour. The Magic Radio, known to some people in the building as the second most important person in the building. Now, you and I both know Santa's the most important person in the building, right, Sean?
Mm-hmm. You betcha.
But there is one office where sometimes the nameplate's upside down, where the thought process is a bit different. The guy who thinks he's the play-by-play voice at Auburn. Hey, thanks so much, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. Check out whatever segment you want on the Steve Jones Show podcast, but check out this segment with Tony. You know, I think that segment probably depressed the suit into the turf, don't you think?
It is what it is. It's all in how you comprehend it.
I remember the days when you cared how the suit felt. Now
you're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.